untouchable. Seriously, we dare you to try and touch him. Bob McCowan at Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour number two of the radio program for this Thursday, the 18th of December. 1 week till Merry Christmas. Bob McCown with Ken Reed. Later this hour, Tim Couch, former number one draft choice, Cleveland Browns quarterback, and now a Fox SEC analyst. I'm going to talk about quarterbacking in Cleveland.
You could perhaps shed some light on what's gone down over the last, only a few weeks, but a few years. Well, more than a few years.
Bernie Kosar, for those that aren't aware, another one of those former Browns quarterbacks. Actually, since the championship days, you could argue Bernie Kosar was probably the best quarterback the Cleveland Browns had.
He was what, circa 1990 came around?
I forget the exact dates. I'd like to think it was a little earlier than that, but maybe it wasn't. In any event, he ripped the organization for their impatience and inability to develop young quarterbacks. Tim, not surprisingly, apparently agrees.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's one of the things that, I don't want to spend too much time on the Cleveland Browns because I don't think our audience in general cares about them. There's the odd guy out there, but, they've gone through so many quarterbacks, and there's some validity to what he says. You know, how you got to give a guy time, mm-hmm. but at the same time, how long is too long?
Well, they actually did give Tim time, and then I think it was his fourth season, he got them in the playoffs, and then he got hurt, and then they say you're not supposed to lose your job when you get hurt, but that's what they say. It didn't really happen, but yeah, it's amazing that Johnny Manziel makes one start. It was a dud, granted, but everybody is all over the kid. Like, he was supposed to come out and just be perfect in his first game, and I mean, the telling sign for me was the day after he had his stinker, his T-shirts were 50% off on clearance.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
So even the stores were giving up on the poor kid. Give him time.
Don Banks will join us in a few minutes. We'll talk about football stuff. The Bears and the Harbaugh offer from Michigan and other things. Also, Dmitry Chesnikov of Yahoo Sports will join us. KHL apparently in shambles. Some people are saying the KHL may not survive.
We've heard some fantastic stories out of the KHL over the years. Guys not getting paid, and mm-hmm. a goalie, I think it was Graham in one case, was thrown in jail. But I think the really good stories from the KHL are going to come from this year. If this league goes kaput, there's going to be some crazy stories about guys trying to get paid and maybe even just trying to get the heck out of Russia. Because this could get very, very wild if the ruble keeps on falling and oil keeps on dropping. Because the whole league is basically built up on oil and big, gigantic sponsorships, because the teams don't draw big crowds, but they still pay big money. So if oil goes down, the whole league is in trouble.
We'll address all that stuff later on with Dmitry. Tonight, the Maple Leafs going for a seventh straight win. They play the Hurricanes. I mentioned to Shannon, is it one of these sandwich games? Mm-hmm. One of these games where you kind of, okay, it's just the Hurricanes.
Yeah.
We beat everybody else. Mm-hmm. We just beat Detroit twice. We beat Anaheim, beat L.A. We can beat these guys. And then you kind of fall flat on your face. And it is a road game, too.
It is a road game. They do like to think they're professionals, and they wouldn't think that way. But I think it's probably natural to think that way. But that'll be up to them to overcome that. But the Canes, they're hurting a bunch. They're not a very good hockey team.
No, they aren't. I'm not sure what the Maple Leafs are yet. Maybe I should be by now convinced that they are a legitimate playoff team.
I think they are a legitimate playoff team. They proved me wrong. I didn't think they were.
Well, I think you probably would have said the same thing before the Olympic break last year.
That is indeed true. There's time left for them to pull
the record
Leafs.
Was almost identical, 11-2-1.
Mm-hmm. And before the Olympics, and now they're what, 10-1-1 on a 10-1-1 run, something
so,
like that.
So just about the same.
There's lots of time left. I mean, like we pointed out yesterday, we'd already all given up on Columbus this year, and now they've rattled off 7 wins in a row. And maybe they have time to claw their way back. And we were all singing the praises of the Calgary Flames, and now they've lost 6 in a row. Mm-hmm. It's a long, 82 games is a long season.
The Toronto Raptors grabbed their 20th victory of the season, the earliest in the history of the franchise. They're 20-6, and still clinging, albeit by only a game, to first place in the East. And another impressive performance where they fell behind U.S. national television last night. I think it was an ESPN game.
Mm-hmm.
And clawed their way back. I think they had a one-point lead at the half. And did what they do. Blew them away in the fourth quarter.
Hey, you talk about people not believing in the Leafs. I think people are believing in this Raptors team because, I mean, what they did in the playoffs last year, that got people up and out of their seats. Yeah, they didn't win, but they had a good run, and it's continued. You haven't seen them slow down at all this year. And if there's one team that's going to, you know, get the bandwagon jumpers on board, it's the Raptors as opposed to the Leafs, who've broken too many hearts recently. But, yeah, this Raptors team, they're just impressive. They just do what they have to do. They win. They win consistently. And it seems like, you know, they weren't rebounding all that well defensively in the first half. And then, you know, they make changes and voila, another win for the Raptors.
Well, you continue to wonder what the future holds for this franchise.
What do you think they'll do?
Well, I said 52 wins at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
I thought, let's say 10% better.
So 52 wins, but then what's a success going into the playoffs? What would you want? Just a series win?
Yeah, I think like every other, I think that depends on where they finish the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they keep playing like this and finish in the top, like if they finish first or second in the Eastern Conference, I think your expectations got to go up. At the beginning of the year, I would have said, okay, get into the playoffs again. New York looked bad and are. Philly looked bad and are terrible. Brooklyn didn't look like they were going to be as good as they were last year, and they aren't. So winning the division was going to be pretty easy. That gets you a playoff spot, no matter what your record is. This team didn't back into that last year. They weren't really even tested much once they got going last year after that start. This year's a totally different animal. I mean, I think the bar is raised enormously, and I'm trying to be calm about this. So I would have said, look, I mean, if you win a first round of the play, win the first round of the playoffs, that's a better year. That's improvement. I'm not at the point yet where I think more than that is necessary.
When was the last time prior to this season that you critiqued Raptors wins? Like they won on the weekend over the Knicks. It took overtime and people were almost, oh, that's awful. They had to go to overtime to beat the Knicks. Whereas before it was just, okay, the Raptors won. What, have you ever critiqued their wins before?
Oh, I think so. I think you can critique the way a team plays.
Mm-hmm.
Just as we, you know, critiqued the Maple Leafs the other night in their win over Anaheim, the first two periods. They got outshot almost 2-1.
But have you ever done that to the Raptors?
Mm-hmm. Sure, because I think it's fair.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can, you know, although basketball tends to be a slightly different game, there tend to be big, obviously, in terms, because there's so much more scoring, there tends to be movement. You know, a team will build a 14-point lead, and the next thing you know, they're tied. And this doesn't happen occasionally. It happens regularly. Last night, the Raptors were down, I think, 8. I don't know what the biggest lead was, but I think it was around 8.
It was pretty, yeah, it wasn't too huge, but yeah, in the first half, they were down.
And they win comfortably going away. So you have to understand those swings, but you do see how a team plays. What I like about this team is if you're going to have a bad quarter, I like the fact that more often than not, it's the first quarter. Not always, but more often than not. Their worst quarter tends to be the first quarter. I like the fact that this team seems to be able to adjust quickly, that the coaching staff recognizes what they are and they aren't doing, seems to be able to get the message to them. They seem to be able to assimilate the message and play better and do it almost instantaneously. So I think that's a very, very good sign. To do it without DeRozan is obviously another good sign. I had no idea what the impact of losing their best player for a prolonged period of time would do to this franchise. Theoretically, you thought, all right, where this team is better than almost everybody else, certainly everybody else in the East, is their bench. So their next five are better than virtually everybody else's next five. Mm-hmm. And those guys can play 20 minutes a night. So they can be the difference. And as often as not, they have been the difference. Although what Casey has done is he doesn't play them as units. And most coaches don't play them as units. But he's got guys coming in and out at all times. So he's integrating, you know, other than the start of the game and the start of the second half, more often than not, those are the only, you know, 6 to 8 minutes where you're going to see the starting five on the court together.
That could be confusing, say, I don't know, for a rookie who's yet to play a second in the NBA. Caboclo last night got a little confused.
No, he actually had a couple minutes earlier,
okay,
in an earlier game.
But he was confused a little last night, no? And he supposed to come in there?
I didn't see the end of the game.
Yeah, he was supposed to check in and
oh,
things got a little strange.
He played less than a minute, didn't he?
Scores table and, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, you got to kind of be on the ball.
Well, maybe he fell asleep.
It didn't have, maybe he did. Maybe he did.
11 minutes past the hour. Here's our friend Don Banks of Sports Illustrated. Hello, Banks. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Good to be back.
A whole bunch of stuff to talk about tonight. Let's start with the Bears' decision to bench Jay Cutler for backup Jimmy Clausen. All right. I understand the Bears are a huge disappointment. Arguably, or maybe inarguably, the biggest disappointment in the NFL this season. Because there were a few people, maybe more than a few people, thought this was a playoff team for sure. Why this decision, in your opinion?
I think how bad they've looked, how listless the offense is, and there's one train of thought that has been expressed that they're going to try to unload him this offseason. They're going to try to figure out a way to make him movable, and if you get him hurt the last 2 weeks, perhaps that becomes more difficult. I think it's going to be very, very difficult to try to get another team to invest in Jay Cutler at this point. But you hear everything from, you know, Mark Trestman trying desperately to have some sort of uptick at the end of the season in order to save his own backside, to the fact that Cutler looks totally and utterly disinterested, perhaps lost, perhaps bewildered by what's going on around him. So what have we to lose by running Jimmy Clausen out there and seeing if something can at least look better in front of our home fans?
Is there any chance this hasn't got anything to do with getting rid of Cutler?
I think it has something to do with getting rid of Cutler. I do. I think that they have to be wondering, as their offensive coordinator, Aaron Kromer, expressed, if buyer's remorse is not serious at this point, and they realize they didn't just extend him. They didn't extend him in the fashion a lot of teams have, working a deal that is basically pay as you go year by year. They sunk, I think it's $54 million into him that's guaranteed, and that makes it really difficult in the current environment to look at this team and say, well, we can just build around him and fix this, because he's a talent, but he's an enigma, and he has been that way throughout his career. And you could argue that this, this is another example of potential coach killing on his behalf.
Who might be interested? Actually, one of the teams I thought would be interested, usually are, would be the Washington Redskins. And yet, there's another story developing with them at the quarterback position.
Right. I think the Jets might have some interest, depending on how things shake out there management-wise.
Sure.
I don't have a long list for you for Jay Cutler. He's a known quantity. We're not talking about a guy that
doesn't
play enough. And, you know, people now know, yes, he has an arm, but the rest of the game is not there.
But if you pay him $31 million over the next two seasons, you have to bring him in with the concept of starting him, don't you?
Yeah, and that's their dilemma. He's being paid as a starting quarterback.
See, I well, the other team I would mention would be Cleveland, who may very well need a veteran backup quarterback next year. Assuming Hoyer goes someplace.
Yeah, I don't think he's at the point. Yeah, I mean,
but you can't pay $31 million for a backup.
Yeah, I don't know how you justify him as a backup. He's got all that money on his deal. Bears are in a real box, and I guess it's more likely they try to fix him. You know, they try to get a coach in there. And then the funny thing was, obviously, Trestman had such success last year with Josh McCown, kind of turning him into a very legitimate starting quarterback, got him paid in Tampa Bay. Cutler had the fair success, but injuries last year, and now he kind of bottomed out this year.
So, Don, is it one or the other going forward in Chicago? Trestman stays or goes, or Cutler stays or goes?
I think both go.
I think I think the dream is they both go. I think Mark is probably in serious trouble for his job, if not already been decided. And then they hope that they could get Cutler off the books and get something for him. I just don't know where that market is at this moment.
Is there any chance that this decision on Cutler was not Trestman's?
I think he had a part in it, but I think it hangs around Phil Emery's neck, the general manager in Chicago. I think it was his decision that we have something of a legitimate starting quarterback, so how can we let him walk? They basically chose. I mean, there was plenty of people saying, well, you think about this now. Maybe you sign Josh McCown for a short-term deal and let Cutler go, and the Bears basically decided to go all in on Cutler. But I think it was Phil Emery's decision, and I think Trestman probably had plenty of input and said, you know, I can definitely win with him, and he has the respect of his teammates and all that good stuff. But then it just all went 180 the other direction this year.
How did it all go 180, Don? Any explanation?
It's a weird team. I think I was not as high on them. I did not pick them for the playoffs. I think they're a chronically underachieving team that tells me it's guys that they think they've done more than they've really accomplished. And I think it really does start with Cutler. I think I've said this before, but if you don't have a head coach or a quarterback who can really lead in the locker room, And I think Mark Trestman is a talented coach, but that's not his strong suit, to be a vocal type of leader. And then you have the quarterback who kind of hangs his head and shrinks in big moments and has the body language from hell on the field and looks as if he's not having any fun. He's just punching a clock out there. I think that was a really bad combination. And I've also said this before. This was a team that could have hired Bruce Arians, and his style would have, I believe, been adored in Chicago, and he has the ability, I think, to kind of raise the level of everybody's intensity and focus, right, and get the most out of a team. And I think the inverse is kind of what we've seen in Chicago this year.
With Don Banks of Sports Illustrated, more quarterbacking controversy. Jay Gruden doesn't want Robert Griffin III as his starting quarterback. Dan Snyder has no intention of trading him away. Colt McCoy replaced him as the starting quarterback and now is hurt. So Griffin's going to start again, and Gruden is saying he's going to build an offense around Griffin. What the hell's going on?
Yeah, I think this is a minute-by-minute story. I think Griffin played pretty well last week in defeat, and everybody said, whoa, now wait a minute. You know, that was a little closer to what they were expecting to see. And I think Gruden, there's a report out there, he's been told he's coming back. Okay, so that's, to me, that's a positive. They're not going to go out all over again and start over in Washington. At that point, I really think they're probably going to tell Gruden, let's give this one more year with Griffin, and let's try to see if we have a guy who hit a wall in transitioning to your offense this year, got hurt, never really got his legs under him, but maybe he's still salvageable. My sense, if I had to put a dollar down, I'd say they're both back this next year in Washington and trying to put a happy face on it and going forward.
Would they really try that? I mean, there's what points to them having any success together?
Only that, look, Griffin got hurt in week two.
Mm-hmm.
That set him back for weeks. He never really got comfortable in Gruden's offense or understood, had time to understand enough of what Gruden was trying to teach him about being more of a pocket passer in the league. Then it became a quarterback merry-go-round once Griffin came back and didn't perform well. It was Cousins' team for a while. It was McCoy's team for a while. Griffin got beat up basically by his own locker room in some senses, his own coach verbally. I just think it's been a total mess, and I could see them trying to put a fresh coat of paint on it in the effort to say, look, we have stability, just like everyone's always saying we don't, and going forward for another year.
They have to trust each other, though, don't they?
Gruden, right, and I think that's Gruden saying things in the last, you know, I think we have a decent enough relationship. I respect what he's done, what he's gone through, what he's already accomplished as a quarterback. I think Gruden realized, look, some of what he said I think did get kind of twisted and misconstrued. And then some of it, I know Jay, he's very blunt, he's very honest, and he won't BS you with his answer. And I think he found out he was too blunt and honest. He was letting the thoughts in his head actually be the thoughts out of his mouth at times. But I think in some sense, he understands, I may have to ride with this guy for another year. That may be the organizational decision. So I'm going to try to make the best of it. And Griffin's performance last week at least gave you a little bit of sense that he looked a little more explosive. He looked a little bit more poised and in control. He looked like he was having a little fun out there again that we haven't seen in a long time. And I thought he had some... he had some energy and some spark for the first time in a while.
Yeah, well, sometimes sitting a guy for a little while can do that. Whether that was what proves to be the case here is still too early to determine. Look, I got to talk to you about this Jim Harbaugh thing. So for those that aren't aware, Harbaugh got an offer, for lack of a better term, from the University of Michigan to go back and become their head football coach, which he allegedly turned down. Michigan, not willing to take no for an answer, put another offer on the table. This one allegedly 6 years, $48 million or $8 million per season. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't know if you've seen anything. I haven't seen Harbaugh respond to that.
Well, I have not.
Well, first of all, what do you think of that offer?
I think it's being made to someone who doesn't want to coach college football. I think he very much wants to get that offer. I think it's great leverage for him. But I think he wants to stay in the NFL. I think his preference is to stay in the Bay Area. And I think unless the Oakland Raiders totally botch the way they approach him and the offer they make him, I think his first choice might be, unbelievably, the Oakland Raiders.
Because he wants to stay in the Bay Area?
His wife wants to live in the Bay Area. I believe he looks at the Raiders a couple different ways. It is the ultimate challenge in today's NFL. He likes those type of challenges. For better or worse, that's kind of his deal. Two, what better place to exact revenge on the San Francisco 49ers than across the bay in Oakland, even if they're now down in Santa Clara. Three, he honestly feels a sense of connection to the Raiders. Al Davis hired him as an NFL head coach for the first time, an assistant on the 02-03 team, the Super Bowl team. He was a low-level assistant, but that's where he got his start in coaching. And he has an allegiance to that franchise dating to that period. And I think if you put those together with a legitimate offer and his own ability to perhaps bring in his hand-picked general manager personnel guy, and Tom Gamble is a name that has been reported, I don't think it's a stretch to see him coaching the Oakland Raiders next year at all.
Do you know what kind of money he would make in the NFL?
I think he'd probably want in that 7 or 8 a year range. And it's as if, you know, the word was he wanted kind of Super Bowl coach winning money, even though he hadn't won one yet. And that was 2 years ago when he went to the bowl but lost narrowly. So I think that's partly where the Michigan offer comes in as well. Don't know where the number will end up, but I think the Raiders will have to pay dearly for him.
again, do you know the answer to this question? At $8 million, if he took the Michigan offer, would he be the highest paid head football coach in the NCAA?
I do not know.
I think he'd not know that.
Where I don't know what Nick Saban is making at the moment, but I'm pretty sure that's the guy.
I would say Saban is the number one guy at Alabama.
I think he'd be above Saban from what I read.
I thought Saban was around seven.
Here we go.
Yeah.
He'd surpass Saban by more than $1.21 million.
Okay, there
average,
you go.
So average little, annual pay.
He's a little under eight, seven.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Doesn't help the NCAA's case.
Doesn't look good.
You know, in terms of, we're not going to pay the players.
Right, but we're going to,
But we're going to give $8 million. We're going to offer $8 million to a coach.
Don, does that get any traction down there? We almost just take the fact that college football coaches get paid outrageous amounts. Does that gain any traction when that side sees, wow, Harbaugh's just been offered a $48 million deal for 6 years at Michigan? Do the NCAA folks start screaming?
No.
Nothing,
I don't think so at all. No, I just think, and frankly, I think the way the NFL pay scale for coaching, I think the best coaches in the league are underpaid.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you have a really good coach in this league, they are worth almost what you're willing to pay them, because it's the guys that know how to keep the bar set high each and every year. And yes, you got to have a quarterback, but boy, it's getting harder and harder all the time. And I think those guys are actually underpaid in the NFL.
Last topic before we go, because I don't think we've ever had this conversation. How about them Buffalo Bills? This is an organization that has been out of the playoffs for an awful long time. A loyal fan base that has been deprived of even competence for an awful long time. And a team that I quite frankly thought was going to lose last weekend. I think most people did. And that would be the end of them. But they are still alive.
Yes, but they're not in great shape. And I think they win this week against Oakland. But their problem is week 17 in New England. And New England probably will need the game. If for some reason New England, let's say Denver loses this week and New England has a cushion and can rest people, which they don't usually do, then they might have a shot. But I really think Buffalo's got to go. They got to go 10-6 to get in, and that's going to be difficult for them. And I'm not even positive that 10-6.
Oh, I'm not sure 10-6 gets in either.
Gets them in. I think it's been a good season. I think Doug Marrone made one of the gutsiest calls of the year when he went with Orton over Manuel. Early, when they realize we have a defense that can win, we can win with, we can kind of control games with a decent quarterback and win our share, and that was the right move. And I think he's obviously going to come back under the new ownership. But they could, 9-7 would be a step forward, but then it sets the bar next year, because at that point you've given. The incumbent coach another year, and it's been a transition to positive reviews for a change at the end of the season. You're still looking at 1999. You're still looking at they went 9-7 and 0-4 and haven't hit that mark. So I think the signs are all good, because that's a hell of a good defense, really really good defense. Jim Schwartz has done a great job. But the playoffs, I think, they're going to regret that Kansas City loss at home, because I think they would have, if they take that one, they would have been in playoff contention.
What, based upon what you've seen, what's missing in Buffalo? I mean, you can say Orton is just a guy.
Yeah,
but he's been good enough.
He's not
great, but he's not terrible.
Right. He's serviceable, and I still think they don't have a quarterback that you really have to game plan for. I think they could still, Watkins really upgraded the receiving game, and they got better seasons out of a couple guys at that position. Maybe Spiller and Jackson, both, one being injured, one being a little elderly, maybe running back. But really, they've got a lot of talent. I thought that in training camp. And their defense has played really well, even after losing Jarius Byrd at safety. But yeah, they're not far at all from being a very, very formidable team.
We got to get out of here. Thank you, as always, for the chat. We'll talk again next week.
We didn't even talk Jacksonville, Tennessee Thursday night game. Amazing.
That's
shocking.
It is stunning news, isn't it?
I'm on after that
participation
one.
Participation trophies after the game. There's punch and cookies, so both teams made it through the whole year.
Ribbons for everyone.
Don Banks of Sports Illustrated. We'll take the break. We'll come back with more football. Tim Couch will join us when primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan.
Let's go!
Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Before the hour, Bob McCown, Ken Reed in our Toronto studios. It's Primetime Sports, Canada's most listened to sports talk presentation on the Sportsnet radio and television networks coast to coast. Later, Dmitry Chesnikov of Yahoo Sports, the failing Russian economy leaving the KHL in shambles. We'll talk about that. Neil Smith of the NHL on Sportsnet will join us later on as well. We talked a little bit about the Cleveland Browns with Don Banks of Sports Illustrated and earlier as well. It is a curious organization and franchise, especially when it comes to quarterbacks. And one of the things, you know, kind of like the Chicago story, Reed, it's, I think everybody understands that at some point you want Manziel to be the number one quarterback. But is this the time? Clearly last week wasn't the time.
And if it's not the time, you can't just discard him immediately. I think that's the other thing. You just, you know, maybe let him back up a few more games. Just don't everybody give up on him suddenly and quickly.
Bernie Kosar is a pretty good quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, and he ripped the organization and their impatience and inability to develop a young quarterback. Our next guest, I think, agrees with him. He is the former Cleveland Browns quarterback. He's currently an analyst for Fox in the Southeast Conference. Here's Tim Couch. Hi, Tim. How you doing?
Hey, I'm great, guys. How you doing tonight?
Excellent. Are you on the same page with your fellow former Cleveland Brown quarterback on this issue?
Yeah, you know, to an extent. You know, I think, you know, a lot of what Bernie said was true. You know, especially, you know, what really made sense to me was the stuff that he said about the quarterbacks and how they, you know, they just don't surround the quarterbacks, I don't think, you know, over the last 15 years with, you know, the best opportunities to be successful. And, you know, in my opinion, they kind of give up on quarterbacks too quickly. They're too impatient with quarterbacks, and not only quarterbacks but head coaches as well. And you know, I don't know the exact stats, but I would imagine over the last 15 years that organization has had, you know, more quarterbacks and more head coaches than any other team in the league. And I think that's just a recipe for disaster, and you're not going to have any consistent success like that. And to me, it's like, you know, you just look in within the division and look how much consistency and, you know, patience that every other team within the division they play in has. You know, you look at Cincinnati and how long Marvin Lewis has been there and the commitment they made to Andy Dalton, and they stuck with him through all the ups and downs that Andy's been through, but he takes them to the playoffs, you know, and they win football games. And then, you know, Pittsburgh with Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger, and then it, you know, Baltimore with Harbaugh and Flacco, those guys, they stay with their coach, they stay with their quarterback through up and down years. And I think that's why those teams are able to go on and be successful. And in Cleveland, I just think they have a really quick trigger over the last 15 years of giving up on a quarterback way too quickly.
All right, so the question today is, and I mean, you're historically accurate. The question today is, should they have let Brian Hoyer play out the string, play out the season, regardless of a couple of really poor performances?
In my opinion, I think they should have let Brian play it out, because, you know, I'm not going to sit here and try to defend how poorly he played over the last basically month. You know, he had a bad three or four game stretch, but you know, he did play some tough defenses. So, you know, he played against Buffalo, who tore up, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning as well.
Yep.
He played against Houston, which has a terrific front seven, and they really got after Brian in that game. But you know, he didn't play well, and that, the facts are the facts. But you know, at the end of the day, Brian had this football team with an opportunity to still make the playoffs. And, you know, the last time I looked in Cleveland, that's a good thing. Last time that team had been to the playoffs is when I took them there in 2002, and they haven't been back since. And, you know, so to have an opportunity to be right on the doorstep of making the playoffs, I think is a great thing for Cleveland. And then you pull the rug out from under a guy like Brian Hoyer, and you bring in, you know, Johnny Manziel, who's a kid that, you know, everyone wants to see, obviously, because of, you know, all the hype and the player he was coming out of Texas A&M. But he's not ready to play. And, you know, I think everyone, you know, now knows that. But I think the coaching staff knew that, or they would have probably, you know, had Johnny in the game a lot, you know, in the lineup a lot earlier in the season. But, you know, it's just tough for Brian, because I really feel bad for him, because I've been in the same situation there in Cleveland where, you know, you feel like you're on the verge of doing something and you're playing well enough to, you know, keep your job and have the team, you know, giving the team the best opportunity to win games, and then all of a sudden they make the switch on you. So I definitely can understand what Brian's going through, and I'm sure he's extremely frustrated with it.
And, Tim, just enlighten us on your story, because you start 14 games in 2002. You take this team to the playoffs, mm-hmm. and then you break a leg and –
Exactly.
It's over, basically, for you there, right?
Yeah, and, you know, that kind of goes back to my point of, you know, how impatient and how quickly they give up on a quarterback. And, you know, in my opinion, you know, I was the first player ever drafted into the new franchise in 1999. And, you know, in our fourth year of existence, you know, I take the team to the playoffs. And to me, that's right on schedule. That's, you know, things are going great. Things are going just as planned. You know, they're a very young football team. You know, we're in the playoffs. And I break my leg the last game of the season against the Falcons, a game that we had to win to get in. And I think I broke my leg in like the third quarter of that game, and wasn't able to go on and play in the playoff game against the Steelers. And, you know, my backup quarterback, Kelly Holcomb, came in and played an unbelievable football game. He threw for like 400 and some yards in the game, and was just outstanding in the game. And, you know, but to me, you know, I'm expecting to obviously come back and be the starter on opening day the next season. And I'm informed that I'm not going to be the starter on opening day. And I just, you know, just didn't understand that, as, you know, if I'm supposed to be the franchise player and I just took the team to the playoffs and all those kind of things, why we're, you know, trying to turn the page. And there's just so much, it creates so much inconsistency, because they've had so many different offensive coordinators, so many different head coaches, so many quarterbacks. And when you turn the page on a quarterback and you put another guy under center, you're starting from scratch, and you're starting all over again, because especially in this situation they're in now with Johnny and Brian, because Johnny's skill set is just drastically different from what Brian does. So you're having to, you know, kind of reinvent this offense with, you know, three games to go in the season or whatever. And it's just it's a very tough thing to do.
Where does this culture of impatience in Cleveland come from? Can you point to anything, Tim?
Well, change of coaches every time you turn around, and change of ownership too,
right?
You know.
Yeah, it's you know, there's been so much change, just like you guys said, within the front office, general managers to, you know, presidents and all that kind of stuff, and then the head coaching changes. You know, they go through a head coach. You know, they give gave one coach a year. You know, a couple of, you know, 2 years ago, whatever it was, they gave him a year, Coach Chudzinski, to get it done. And I thought he was on the verge of, you know, kind of getting the team to, you know, be competitive, and they gave up on him after a year. So it's just a quick trigger. I think there's a lot of impatience from the fan base. And, you know, an unbelievable fan base. They're awesome. They're great. They're very supportive of the team. But, you know, I think the years that they went from, you know, when the Browns became the Ravens and they were without a football team for all those years, they became, you know, very hungry to get a team back. And when the team came back in 99 as an expansion team, you know, I think, you know, just starting from the ground up was probably really frustrating to that fan base, because I think they expected to kind of, you know, pick up where the old Browns left off with Bernie and all those guys that were so much success. And, you know, that's just not reality. You know, you're starting from the ground up and trying to build an organization and build a team. And, you know, so they start calling for, you know, new quarterbacks, new coaches. They want you know, kind of demand success pretty quickly. And I think that that may have something to do with it.
Once the Browns lost 2 weeks ago, I think they felt as though, I think most of us felt as though they weren't going to make the postseason. So the initial reaction I had, while I would rather have seen Brian Hoyer play out the rest of the year, was that, all right, if you're going to make the move, and I guess we were destined to see this at some point, maybe this makes some sense to go to Manziel now. Does this mean Hoyer is finished as a Cleveland Brown, though, at the end of this season?
You know, I think it would be very difficult to go back to him now. I think Brian and you know, I'm just speaking, just, you know, just looking at it from the outside in. I think he would be very frustrated with the organization. You know, I think it would be difficult for him to, you know, to go back in and turn it back over to him. I think once you make that switch to a guy like Johnny, who's a, you know, first round draft pick and a very high profile guy, I think that's kind of the direction you're headed. And I think Brian kind of sees the light at the end of the tunnel with that. And I assume that he imagines he'll probably be somewhere else at you know, at the start of next season. And the good thing for Brian is, he played well enough this year, especially early in the season. You know, there's so many teams that need a quarterback. Someone's going to pick up Brian Hoyer because, you know, he's proven that he can win games in this league. And, you know, I think in the right situation, he can be a really good quarterback. So hopefully it all works out for him. But I really do think for Cleveland, you know, now that Johnny is in the football game, is in the lineup, I think that, you know, you've kind of turned the page and you're headed in that direction with the young guy.
Do you think that Johnny Manziel needs a veteran quarterback behind him if he's going to be the starter at the start of next year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be great for Johnny. You know, we all knew, you know, when Johnny was coming out of college, he had a long way to go to transition his game from college, what he was doing in college, to be an NFL quarterback and just playing within the pocket and, you know, making those, yep, you know, those tough throws and all that kind of stuff that NFL quarterbacks have to make. And he's just not there yet. He's just not ready to play. He doesn't have a great understanding of the passing game and all those kind of things. And, you know, in college, you know, a lot of his plays came from, you know, extending plays, broken plays, not really within the system and those kind of things. So he's got a ways to go on that. And absolutely, a veteran quarterback could teach him, you know, how to study film, how to prepare for teams, how to get, you know, get himself ready to play and how to work within the pocket and how to, you know, you go through reads and progressions and, you know, protect yourself against blitzes, all those kind of things that, you know, veterans have seen over and over and over and could certainly be a huge benefit for Johnny.
Before we let you go, Ohio State or Alabama, who do you like?
Oh, man, I think it's going to be a great football game. I really do. I think it's going to be a close one. I think at the end of the day, Alabama probably wins the game. But, you know, I'm so impressed with what Ohio State's been able to do this year. You know, if you look at a team, and Urban Meyer, the coaching job he's done, they lose two, not one, but two Heisman Trophy candidates at quarterback.
Yep.
You know, one to start the season and another one, you know, during the season. And they put the third string guy in who's really never taken a meaningful snap in his career, and he wins the Big Ten championship 59-0. So, you know, hats off to Urban Meyer and the job he's done there this season. It's been unbelievable what he's been able to do. But I just think at the end of the day, Alabama's probably a little bit more talented team right now.
We enjoyed talking to you. Thanks very much. And hopefully we'll have a chance to do it again soon.
That'd be great. I enjoyed it, guys. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim. Tim Couch, the former number one draft choice of the Cleveland Browns, their first draft choice when they got the franchise back, became the starting quarterback in Cleveland, led them to the playoffs, breaks his leg. Kelly Holcomb goes in, finishes off the job in that last game of the season, plays very well in the playoffs in spite of a loss, and they wound up giving him the number one quarterbacking job the next year. It is a pattern that we have seen repeatedly in Cleveland, including Hoyer, who, you know, got the job the same way because the guy ahead of him, Hoyer was actually the third string quarterback, if I remember correctly, finally gets a chance to start because the other two guys don't look like they can beat anybody, wins three straight, but breaks his leg or his knee, hurts his knee,
mm-hmm.
I think against Buffalo last year, and then in spite of drafting Manziel, Hoyer's the number one quarterback.
And then if you want to put the whole thing into a neat little package and you want to say, well, what's one perfect example of the impatience, then you look at what happened after Manziel's dud against Cincinnati. Everybody freaks out the next day, and it's one game for one kid, and according to Tim, maybe that kid should have been in there. You should have kept Hoyer going, but I mean, I like speaking to Tim because he's a guy who speaks from experience. He basically did everything by the book. The next thing he knows, Jeff Garcia has come to town, and his time is up when he just kind of thought his time was getting started. So those are your Cleveland Browns,
yeah,
Bob.
Yeah, I know. It's a mess, and it's not getting any unmessier as they look like they're on their way to 7-9 and missing the playoffs. Well, they're not going to make the playoffs, even if they won their last two games. 9-7 ain't getting you in.
Will you still watch?
Well, I watch when they're, you know, 3-13, so I guess I got to watch when they're 7-7 with two to go.
Nice.
In the next hour, Neil Smith will join us in studio, and Dmitry Chesnikov of Yahoo Sports. That's when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.